Dude. Another one.
Yes, baby.
A win.
It's huge, man. Come on.
Man.
Who's that? 4 out of 6 right now? I think that's where we're at. I mean, that's pretty baller.
3 in a row. That's all I care about, right?
And check this out, though. I was doing, you know, stats checking last night, you know, like I do when I can't sleep sometimes. And the stat check that I was doing was points per game, man.
PPGs,
baby. Do you
know
that we're 6th in the league in points per game?
Yeah, I saw you. I saw you texted that to me. I wouldn't have believed it because, man, early on, everybody's saying, offensively, this team is...
We suck offensively, blah, blah,
anemic
blah.
Or something.
Fucking doubters out there, bro.
Goddamn doubters. Motherfuckers don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Bro,
man,
no doubt about
you know,
that, man.
Yesterday, man, I'm like vibing. You know what I'm saying? Having a good afternoon.
Grooving, baby.
Getting ready for the game. And the song pops on, man. And it was a fucking crazy song. It's like this guy, he's like screeching like... talking about unavailable men and like fuck boys and like the best dick he's ever had, like super strange song for like my play taste, right? But I'm hearing it, and the only thing I'm like thinking about after I'm laughing about it and like having a good time, because guys like unavailable men, I love men that are unavailable. It's like, you know, just a crazy song. Anyways, all I'm thinking about the whole time I'm listening to it is fucking Toronto, man, and fucking New York Knicks and shit like that. And like how like all these other teams around the league. And I just saw something else about like somebody's out there talking about that Utah should trade like 6 draft picks to get Shea. And it's just like, guys, we're hearing all this shit because everybody wants unavailable men. I mean, within reason. So, you know, you look at it and you're saying, you know, who we want next? Who do we want next on this team? And you're like, okay, well, who's the stars? Who's the superstars? Who's the budding superstars? And sometimes those are available on shitty teams. But when you have a team that, like the Oklahoma City Thunder, that's starting to find their groove, they're starting to find out that there is no price. No price for Shea that people are going to be able to pay.
Man, and watching the rest of this team come along development-wise, there's so many things to say about so many different guys. Usman Jang jumps off the plate. You know, we also got J-Dub playing big minutes. Josh Giddey, logo 3. I mean, we could go down and on and on and on. But before we go too far, I want to tell a quick story, right? There is a time, and this is why this is development is so important to me, and this is why I care so much about development. But I was coaching a team, and it was a 16 and under girls team, and it was a JV team. And there was a girl on that team who ended up, like, she's a sophomore, 6'1", she's very athletic, but she had terrible time with, you know, beating herself up when she missed shots. And that's tough because that girl could not make a layup when I got there. So I ended up really working with her and teaching her, and I'm not going to tell you her name, but I kept teaching her, only listen to me. Only pay attention to what I'm saying. I want you to continue to shoot. I want you to continue to be aggressive no matter what. I don't care if everybody else is getting upset at you, right? This is sophomore year JV girl who didn't make the varsity. This is, you know, and so I go on and I start coaching this group, and I keep telling her, no matter what, keep shooting. Like, nobody else on the team could even get to the basket to shoot layups. And her problem is she just couldn't make the layups, right? So after a possession one time, she missed, I think, 8 layups on a single possession, right? We get the ball back. I call timeout, and I go into the huddle. I'm like, look, you have to keep shooting. I'm going back to your very next possession, right? Didn't matter, okay? And she was a girl that could get, like, 8 rebounds and 2 points generally in a game. And by the end of the year, bro, she was putting up 20-20 games. And she went on to go Division I. She went to University of Houston. She set some records as a freshman there. She didn't stick it out because they brought in a new coach. You know how that goes. But my point is this. Like, this girl is a girl that couldn't even play on the varsity. They didn't want her. But by the end of the season, they're all like, oh, imagine how good the varsity be with her. But that's what development is. It's like you have to get into these players' faces and sometimes say, don't listen to anybody else. I'm the one you got to listen to. And right now, I just want to say for, like, Lou Dort, like, he's running this risk with fans who are, like, you know, out with pitchforks and stuff and like holding up his shot sheet and saying, you know, oh, he shouldn't be shooting these shots. Like, he has to stay aggressive. I would rather we lost the game than Lou Dort lose his aggression, because that would be a step back for him. We can't take step backs. We can win, okay, and we can rely on players to develop at the same time. And when that happens, we win. But if we say, don't shoot because we want to win, we lose in the long run. So I get it. Like, man, some people look at somebody and say, there's a cap. Fuck caps. Nobody ever thought this girl could go Division I when she was a sophomore who got cut from the varsity, right? But that happened because development, bro. And yesterday, last episode, we were talking a lot about J-Dub's development. I cut you off, but you were like, you were on a roll, bro. And I just want to make sure you got all the words in on that you wanted to say, because I feel bad for cutting you off on that.
No. Let's talk about, we're talking about Dort right now. So let's just go into it, because I feel there's a lot of similarities to the way the media treats Dort to the way the media treated Russell Westbrook when he took shots.
Absolutely. Yep.
They didn't understand a lot of the time that when Russ was growing, he was learning what his range was. And that's what I see with Dort, is that he's still learning. He's still understanding. He's still trying to figure out how to do and play the game Dort's way. And that just takes time. And for me to sit here and say that he's got to do this better and he can't take these shots, to me, is just silly, because he's still not finished developing as a player. And when you look at who Dort could be in the future with the way he plays defense and then possibly even throwing in there 15 to 20 points a game, like, there's very few guys in the league that can do that. If he could be an all, you know, on the all defensive team, whether it's the first, second, or third, and then look at it like he puts up 15, 20 points a game, he will have a very long, successful career in the NBA. And I know Dort has that starting role right now, and we have everybody else that's growing. It's great to have somebody like Dort that can go out there and score those points, so that J-Dub, when he's having a little bit rocky start or rocky playing, we're not leaning on him to do all this other stuff. We're not leaning on these other guys to do stuff, because we know that Dort's going to come out and shoot 14 to 15 shots a game. And we're good with that.
As long as he's getting downhill, getting to the basket, you know, and shooting when he's open. And sometimes people be like, oh, that's a bad shot. But he's been shooting shots from deep, you know, early in the shot clock and hitting him sometimes. So I get why different people will be critical of that, but we need to just relax and understand when things get out of hand, right? Every coach says, listen to me, don't listen to the media, don't listen to the fans, right? Every coach will say that. But we saw with Russ, like, it gets out of hand, and then there's the lack of trust between the media and the player, and then the fan base and the player, and it gets very bad.
Look at what happened in L.A. I mean, there was such a massive disconnect with Russ and Los Angeles media. And what you didn't see was all the love that Russ was getting from the fans. You know, every single time Russ does something great, he's out there doing something, and the fans are getting rallied up.
Yeah, but the negative ones will always get the attention, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we have to avoid letting that happen. We can't let people do that with Dort.
Dort.
And similarly, right, there was a lot of early season negativity toward Josh Giddey. Bro, it was at a ridiculous level, even for a fan base that is consistently out of whack with reality, right? And then all of a sudden we see what we saw.
Well,
last
they're
night.
At whack with the reality is because who they listen to on a daily basis, who's out of whack in reality in general.
It starts out with Barry Trammell, and it's a trickle down, you know, old Reaganomics, Pete. Piss on everybody's head and let it trickle down. But anyway, listen. I'm sorry I said Reaganomics. I should not have got involved in anything political. We are going to move back to the real point, bro. Giddey is knocking down threes now.
Yeah, he is.
And, bro, that one, well, I mean, I feel like shooting that three from Trey Mann's logo, it meant something to me. Did it mean something to you?
Yeah, man, of course. Like, watching Giddey develop into the player that he's developed into has been one of the more exciting pieces right now, because if you look in the last few games, I mean, he's just taken off. And a lot of that's due to the fact that you have Shea getting the best defender, you know, and then you have whoever in the power forward position is taking up the next best defender, you know, and then you have the third best defender is either on Dort, right? Or if they're a little bit taller, they're on Giddey. So who's that? The small forward? And he's so much quicker than that small forward. So again, it's that we talked about it. It's that lull time. It's that fourth quarter. You know, what happened in that game last night? What was the difference in the game? Was that fourth quarter? You know, that fourth quarter, I think we're down by 4 points going into that fourth quarter. But that second team, that Josh Giddey, that J-Dub, You know, that team right there put up some crazy points really fast. And then we had Shea, like he did in last game, come in and close it out. You know, that difference in the game was two things. First of all, that fourth quarter, the way that second team played, and then we hit free throws. We missed one free throw in the entire game. Down the stretch, Josh was perfect. Shea was perfect. We only had one missed free throw, and that was from Wiggins. Everybody else that stepped up to the line hit the free throws. And in a close game like this, yeah, it was 7 points. But really, it was a possession game, a two-possession game, because they started playing like foul ball or whatever you want to call it with a minute.
Games.
And,
yeah,
one possession game and a minute and something to go. And listen, that's great because we got some big-time buckets because we hit the free throws. But we missed two or three, and it's a completely different game. And that's what I'm proud of these guys for, is that when the game was on the line, not only do we step up and hit those free throws, but we executed on everything that we're supposed to execute. Like, hell of a job. This was a huge win because, again, we got a lesson, a master class with the Celtics, man. You know, you talked about it last podcast. Like it came to closing time, and we took that master class that we got from Celtics, and we were able to step it up in the last game that we played against Minnesota. And then we saw it again here. And everybody that sits there and says, oh, that's a bad loss. A bad loss to a good team is a good loss. Or, I'm sorry, a close loss to a good team is a good loss. And when you have a team that you're ahead all game and all of a sudden the Celtics turn it on the last like 3-4 minutes of the game and they win the game, that's a master class for these young guys. They're like, how do they do that? I want to figure out how to do that too. Because now you're seeing, like, we struggled all game. And say what you want to say about Shea. Like, he had 35 points. Hell of a game. But it was probably his worst shooting game of the season, I felt like. You know, like, less than 50%. You know, he got to the foul line really well, finished there. But he had these silly turnovers. Like, turnovers that I haven't seen him make all season. You know, Devontae Murray had great reads on them, you know, every single one of them. But it were like almost like lazy passes. Did you see some of them? Like, I was really unimpressed with what was going on. And I did not feel like the first half that we had what it takes to be able to win the game. But we kept on keeping it close. And then all of a sudden we see Shea turn it on in that fourth quarter. You know, that next gear. And I was like, okay, all right. You know, like that's all we needed. That's it. You know, Shea wasn't having a great game that first half. He put it together in the third quarter, and then came back out in that fourth quarter, and he executed, and we won the game. It was a hell of a job. It was a closeout game. It was what we needed to see from Shea, because when everything's going great for a player, right, it's easy to close out a game. But when shit's going down, it's not as easy. When you have other things in the back of your head, and you're like, I got to go to the free throw line 15 times, and then you got to hit all 15 to win the game, you know, like, that's not as easy as you may think, especially if you've been missing shots all over the court.
Yeah, stepping up with confidence. And we got to give our coaching staff a lot of credit, because we're seeing this improvement happen from the shooting perspective, not just on the players who we're seeing all the time, but Usman Jang was money, bro. And like, I don't know how to explain it, but the ball went through the net differently. You know what I mean?
It's effortless.
It's effortless. And I started thinking of a player that plays very different, but why not compare him? But like a Michael Porter Jr., right? 6'10", effortless 3-point shot. Now, you take it from there. I don't know what else to say.
He just needs time to develop. I mean, like, that. What else do you need? Like, that. He's the project player from this draft. Like, every draft we get at least one of them. This year, I felt like with two of them, with Jalen Williams, J-Will, you know, and he needs time. It's not like this is going to be, you know, automatic. He's still young. He's still under that 20-year-old range. And I think that's what we have to step at and look at, is that, like, these are the clear indications that if he can come out and put up 15 points here and there and come out and be productive, even though he's not scoring, you know, like, it's whatever it takes to get minutes. And then when everything starts clicking, that's the next gear. But, you know, last episode, we got carried away a little bit with talking about where these guys could be and the players that they could be. And I look at Usman Jang and I say, you know, he's that perfect type of role player that could turn that switch on and you could see something special out of him. Or He could just be a really fucking top of the line role player. And you know what? Both of those type of guys make $100 million in their career. And when you're his size and have his ability, you know, you can't help but wonder, like, what is his upside? You know, where could he be? And I get carried away when it comes to Poku and some of these other guys. And it's fun. I mean, think about it. Is there any other team in the league that there's so much question marks to what this team could be in the next 6 years about these players individually? About, like, the league is just finding out about Poku. And they're all like, what? How did we never hear about this guy? Or how has he gone from this player to this player? You know? The same is going to be for Usman Jang and J-Dub and J-Will. And all these other guys are coming through the system. It's going to be like, holy cow. Because when everybody's in that, you know, third year, second year, fourth year, it's a whole new ballgame. And we have eight players that are going to be in their second and third year together, or third and fourth year together. Those are the guys that I'm looking at and saying, you know, the sky's the limit with these guys. You know, I want to say, like, Shea and Dort and, you know, the other guys. Well, let's just say Shea and Dort for right now, Kenny Hustle. These guys are staples to this team for now. But who knows in the future? Like, I know Shea's going to be on this team for a long time, and I feel like Dort's going to be on this team for a long time, but there comes a point where, like, you talked about it last game, where a player goes down, or, you know, Joe Montana, you know, he goes down and Steve Young comes up. You know, Joe Montana gets injured, Steve Young wins a few championships, Super Bowls, and then on the other side you got Tom Brady. The same thing happened there. Like, his first Super Bowl was after Drew Bledsoe went down, you know? So, like, these guys, it's happened before. So where is this team going to be in 3-4 years? I don't know. But I can tell you this right now is that each player is playing like they don't have that starting position for very long. And the aggression that Dort has and that charge that I don't know who took, was a rookie that took yesterday on Dort, you know, and Dort squared him up right in the chest. Like, that guy laid on the ground for a couple extra seconds, and Dort's walking away, and he's like, ooh. Guess what happened the next time Dort went down the lane? That guy did not step in Dort's way. You know, like, that's a once in a, like, that's once in a game. Like, I'll step up and take a charge from Dort, but that's it. I mean, that's it. I'm not going to take another one of those. Like, I don't want to end up in the locker room early. And I think that's the thing about it is you're watching these guys, they're starting to get better. And the way that Dort attacks the hole and goes downhill, it fits the system so well. So you can say, oh, we don't want Dort taking these shots. But guess what? Hell yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do.
Because we don't know if this is going to turn into a player that can average 20 to 25 points a game. And the only way to find that out is by letting him do what he's doing on a young team already. So let him take those shots. Let him go take 15, 16, 17 shots in a game and put up, you know, what did he do last night? 11 points off of those shots. Like, I don't care. It's not all putting on Shea and saying, Shea, you got to go do this yourself. Or J-Dub, you got to step up, man. You got to start doing more, you know, or Josh Giddey. Like, you letting these guys, you know, come in their own game. And not being forced and put in situations, and Dort's allowing that those guys to be able to do that. So, you know, if it wasn't for Dort taking those 16 shots, we'd be leaning on a lot of rookies and second year players that I feel like they're just not ready at this point. And I'm not saying they're not going to be ready in 10, 15, 20 games, but at this point in the season, they're not ready for that extra, you know, 7-8 shots a player there.
Yeah, the only way Dort could really put more pressure on Shea and the rest of the guys is by just, like, not believing in himself. And we've seen him already. Like, it's easy to forget, although nobody should forget, like, how far he came. Like, his first year, they wouldn't even run out at him. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And he's at the point where they're going to send multiple defenders at him. There's no way they're not going to run out at him because he's shown he can knock down that three. So now if they're going to send multiple defenders, then he's got to be willing to put the ball on the floor, get downhill, and finish with finesse. Finesse is hard for a power player, but yeah, we've seen him progress, and we really believe in what he, like, when he gets the ball, I feel like there's more likely a good thing will happen than a bad thing, right? And it's not because he's going to shoot most of the time, right? That's like he'll shoot when he's got an advantage, but he's also willing to get downhill and pass the ball. And that's something that runs them out amongst the team. If you get downhill and you have tunnel vision, there's going to be a lot of charges called on you. But if you get downhill and you're willing to stop and let somebody else who's passed their man, you get, you know, get the ball in front of you. We saw a play 2 games ago by J-Dub. I had to watch it like 4 times because I couldn't figure out how he made that pass. This game, we saw like a continual like get downhill. And really, the game didn't turn around until we started defending.
Yeah.
And then getting downhill before the team had a chance to get set up. Like, that's when I started thinking, like, hey, we've seen this before, but not from this team. We saw this from the team like the Celtics, where they were like, we were just going to create opportunities on the offensive end by defending. That's how we were going to do it. We came to that conclusion at some point in the game. You know, it wasn't the only way, but like we were going to get good shots in half court, but those shots were not falling. Like the shots that we could count on were fast break shots. That's it. So we got out and ran, and the way we got out and ran was defend. And the way we defended was Lu Dort, J-Dub, Josh Giddey. Like, it takes a team to defend.
Yeah, and we played big against them. You know, like, we played big and strong against them. And, you know, I don't know how many times I felt like Trae Young and Devontae Murray, like, DJ, like, these guys had opportunities to score more points, many, many more points. But you saw them just felt like they're just running into a wall. You know, like, ugh, like, the fourth quarter came and everything just stopped. Like, yeah, they only scored 3 less points and 4 less points technically in the quarter, but they had to work so much harder for those other buckets. And you could see Trae Young laboring. You could see, you know, and it's starting to understand, like, we may not be one of those teams that's able to keep a team under 100 points very often. But if you look at the way that they have to play in order to get 100, there's very few teams that consistently can play with that. And we're still not to that point where I would consider us healthy. I would consider us to the point where we have all of our pieces in place. Like, we still have so much more going on. And I think that's the key about this game was, yes, the offense had clicked. Yes, we got that 121 points a game, or 121 points, and watching that was fun. But watching what our defense had to do in order to win this game, and especially in that last 3 minutes of the game, man, that was some phenomenal shit. Like, just unbelievable job by Coach D and the coaching staff to recognize what type of defense was going to close out the game for us. And, dude, it was exciting. Like, I get what people are going to say, is there's so much we can take off of this that could be negative. But the reality is Shea got 35 minutes when a game that it wasn't easy for him. He was able to put up 35 points. 6 rebounds, 7 assists, whatever it was. Like, it wasn't easy for him. Yet he was out there doing what he needed to do to win the game. And I think that's the biggest thing that we're looking at, is we're seeing this team come together. And people will say, oh, there's no way we're going to win 35 to 45 games. But we're 6th in the league in scoring. We're top 10 in the league in defense. You know, like, the defensive stats that matter. Like, you know, Dort's number one in offensive collecting offensive fouls against the other team. You know, like, he's the first place. You have Kenny Hustle that's up there. You know, like, you have Shea, who's in the top five in steals. I think he's number one in steals and in point guards. And you also have block shots. We have multiple guys that are in the top 20 in block shots in the league. Like, we're leading in so many categories in stats that you can't help but wonder, when everything is together, when everybody is scoring and everybody's doing the things that we need to at the end of the season, because that's what the season is. It's all a warm-up to the last 20 games, 20, you know, 30 games of the season and into the playoffs. If you could get there, it's all gravy. If you can get there, even if you're limping, like, how many times have we seen a team that's limping into the playoffs and somehow manages to get to the finals? You know, it happens all the time. You look at 3 and 4 seeds, 5 seeds. Like, it happens enough where it's like, okay, that team was hurting during the year, but they clicked on during the playoffs and they were okay. And they were able to, you know, win it through. So to me, I'm just looking at this team and how we've been able to stay together as a team, as a unit,
playing defense, playing offense, and we've sneaked up into the top 10 in both statistics, and you can't help but wonder what that means for this team. I mean, short term, yes, great, but I mean, we're talking long term. If they can continue to do this, then you can't sit here and say that we're not a top 15 team in the league.
People will say it, but we just won't buy it, right? Like, we got to keep competing, but when with a team this young, like, you have to assume if they stay healthy, they're going to improve. That's it. Like, yeah. So in-season improvement is one of the things that we're counting on. All right, so let's talk about something that I find a little bit interesting, and then, you know, I'll let you kind of comment on it. But we played, what, we played 11 guys, right? 2, 4, 5, 11. All right. The least amount of minutes was Isaiah Joe with 10 minutes, but yep. He scored 9 points.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
3 for 4 and threes.
Everybody yep. scored who played. Wiggins ended up with 1 point. Poku with 2. Okay. But everybody scored. That shows that helped. Everybody got a rebound. Okay. And everybody except for one player got an assist who played. And that was JRE. He ended up with 10 points and 6 rebounds. So I'd say he had a good game. He did what we needed him. Knocked down a big three. Like, he plays big-time baskets, and he's a great passer. So that lack of an assist has nothing to do with his game. Just opportunities. But Isaiah Joe, 2 assists. Aaron Wiggins, 3 assists. Poku, 3 assists. Mike Muscala, 3 assists. I mean, these are bench players. Trey and yeah. Usman each got 1 assist. Like, this is big-time stuff because, well, you know what? Like I said, I'm going to let you tell us why it's big-time.
It's team basketball, man. Like, how many teams do you see that they have at least 1 or 2 players that all they do is focus on scoring? You know, like, that's their whole deal, is that they just score. You know, it's just nice to be able to see a team go out there and it's like the first pass, boom, he's semi-open. He holds the ball for half a second longer than the typical person, acting like he's going to take that shot. So the guy has to come out and pass, guard him, and then he passes to the open guy. It happens so much during the game. You know, it happens so much where these guys drive to the hole and they recognize that they have a hard shot, but JRE has the easy shot, or, you know, J-Dub's coming baseline for the easy slam. Like, we're seeing it consistently. It's a beautiful mix of proper basketball. I mean, like, how many times have we heard, and you know, we used to play those drills where you would have to go the full court back and forth, you know, without dribbling. You know, like, that's what this team's doing. Like, the ball comes out of imbalance, it goes boom to the first person, you know, Josh, to J-Dub, to you know, Shea, to Dort. It's coming out to that first person, and that first person may take a couple of dribbles, but that ball is going out of his hands as quickly as possible and getting up that court. I mean, sometimes we slow it down to slow down the game, but when we're going out there, it's every fucking possession. You know, every fucking possession. It doesn't matter if it's a free throw, it doesn't matter if it's a made bucket. They have one of the last guys that come, you know, cross half court besides our point guard. And it's beautiful. It's the fact that we're getting down there and we're having an opportunity to get 4-on-5 basketball. You know, even 4-on-4. It opens up the entire court. So, you know, we'll take our chances every single time. Like, I love the fact that they guarded Shea, you know, full court last game, you know, against the Hawks. I mean, they were guarding him full court. We're having J-Dub and Josh bring up the ball. Like, and Shea starting on the wings, and he was going all over on the offensive you know, area. But within the offense, he would get a pick, and he would roll off that pick, and he'd come off that pick hard, and he'd be ready to go to the hole. And that's what we saw, and that's how it's so beautiful, is that, you know, Shea wasn't having necessarily a great game bringing up the ball, but it's because of the pressure that he was receiving, so we moved him off the ball. We put him over there, and then we brought Josh and J-Dub bringing up the ball. And these guys, you know, started our offense. And it goes back to, you don't need Shea starting the offense to be successful. You know, you don't need Shea to start the offense for him to get 35 points. It, you know, it helps. But in a game like this, man, like, you're getting, you know, as many buckets as possible from anybody. And Dort's, you know, the way he was getting up the court and getting up the fast breaks, like, dude, it was so awesome to see, and it was so great to see that this offense as a team and as a unit is brilliant, and what it can accomplish playing like this. I mean, everybody knows where everybody's at on the court. It's a 5-point advantage immediately. against other teams. And then you start adding all these 5-point advantages that we have, and you're looking at, like, you know, well, every game we get a 20-point advantage just starting off, just by the way that we play. I mean, that's so huge. I mean, we're the youngest team in the NBA, second youngest team in NBA history, and Coach D has figured out these little subtle ways of getting advantages to add 20 points to our scoreboard every game, whether it's an offensive board, whether it's steals, whether it's block shots and getting fast breaks off of those, whether it's fast breaks off of made free throws from them. It's so next level, guys, and it's so amazing to see, is because it's a beautiful offense being run by a coaching staff that it's so next level that the NBA hasn't really caught on yet.
Yeah, I mean, you give Coach Degno a lot of credit there, and, like, obviously the players are out there doing these things, but as a team, like, we've created a priority around defending your man and being a part of a team defense, rebounding the ball, running up and down the court, like getting down the court as fast as you can, right, and swinging the ball from side to side. Now, obviously, you could look at our box score and say, we have a team where Shea is the star, 35 points in 35 minutes. Fine. That's not untrue. But there's ways that players score 35 points where they're like a black hole.
Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, like, there's different ways to do it. And when the team plays this style, when they play this together, it takes that pressure off. If Shea, let's just say the game was slightly different, right? And it didn't become a free throw shooting contest at the end.
Yeah.
Right? Shea could have ended up with like 25 points or something, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how many free throws he knocked down.
He made 15 free throws on 15 attempts. So he had 20 points off of field goals.
It would be any less of a good game for Shea if he only had 25 points and he just didn't go to the free throw line 10 times and say, like, they were able to deny him the ball and J-Dub went to the free throw line and knocked those down. It wouldn't be any different, right? The thing about it is it's about sharing the ball. Like, if you go back to, like, the Bulls, why they really needed to bring in Phil Jackson and when Michael Jordan was, you know, doing it all himself, and it became this huge thing about trust. And Phil had different ways of instilling trust in teammates. Some of them were weird. But I like weird, so I got nothing wrong with that. But
weird's, like, good.
In the end, like, there's different ways to accomplish it. But you need to be able to, like, trust that if you swing the ball will find you again. You need to be able to trust that, like, if they're denying you full court with a defensive player as good as Murray, that you can go to the corner, get a screen, and initiate the offense from a different angle. Like, that's trust. And if you don't have that trust, then, well, we've seen it on the Thunder at different times where players didn't have trust in each other, didn't have trust in the coaching staff, and then they felt like if they couldn't do it all themselves, then it wasn't going to get done. And that's, like, great. Like, that's great because a lot of NBA teams end up that way. It's just not great for our team. We don't want that shit.
You're right, man. And you're seeing all these what we call prima donnas and drama queens out there and these other teams that, you know, you can't help but wonder, like, you know, how that truly affects the whole squad. You know, watching Trae Young, he was not himself last night.
Yeah, well,
you know, he did not respond well to coaching.
Tell everybody about that report if they don't know.
Yeah, man, it was just Trae Young essentially was given an ultimatum. Like, you be at practice and shoot around or don't come to the game.
I think there was more to it than that, but that was basically
I'm sure,
it.
I'm
it
sure was there like, was, but...
He didn't go to the game because, you know, I guess him and... Yeah.
Yeah, Coach Nate, like, they had a little standoff because, like, he's getting back from injury and he didn't want to have to practice. And he said, no, in order to play the game, you have to practice. And, you know, like, there's so much more drama.
We're talking about practice?
Yeah, we're talking about practice. But that's the thing, though, is that, like, I think you're watching Trae in this unhappy scene right there. And, like, he did all right. I mean, he scored 20-something points, 23 or 24 points. Yeah. Like, he did all right. But the point is that you're seeing this and you're like, okay, dysfunction, right? Automatic dysfunction from coach to a player, a superstar type player, means that there's a first round exit in the playoffs if they get there. You can't have that type of dysfunction. And here's the thing. The crazy thing about that is that that happens with teams that we've seen a team get knocked out that was the number one seed before, you know, like, and it happened because there was dysfunction. You know, the Thunder barely get into the playoffs this year, and they're playing against a team that has a shit ton of dysfunction. Like, it could be the Suns, you know, like, dysfunction and an injured player. You know, like, are you telling me that the Thunder aren't going to win in a 7-game series in there? You know, like, that's the type of situations that you have to get to the playoffs because you don't know what's going on. And as a functioning team that has a coach that everybody's surrounded and around and believes in the system that he's preaching and teaching out there, like, this is a whole new thing we're talking about. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen an organization, especially all the players, buy into the system like everybody is here. And I don't know what that means this team is capable of. I don't know if that anybody knows what that team, this team is capable of. We could be sitting here saying 45 was undercutting it. And I know, right? Crazy. But 45 wins is something that we look at as being slightly above 500. That's it. You know, we're talking 500 basketball right now with 45 wins. And I'm looking at this team and saying, you know what? This team is going to be within spitting range of 500. You know, so we're talking, that means that we're talking between 38 and 40 wins. And that's what I feel like this team is capable of doing right now without any other improvements that they need to make. So are we saying that in February when it's time to play that we can't pull off an enormous amount of wins, that we can't all of a sudden put things together? Like, we need to stop, take a deep breath, recognize what Coach D's done with this offense, what Coach D's done with this defense, and recognize that there is so many teams out there that don't want to win games right now. You know, they won't ever admit to it, but they don't want to win games, because if they win games, it puts them in a position where they're not going to have a better opportunity to get the prize possession.
Well, this is the time of every episode that we allow everybody to take a time to recommit their lives to the Oklahoma City Thunder. It doesn't mean everybody who's listening has always been perfect. Maybe you've criticized people's shot charts or thought maybe some people should stop shooting. Maybe you even said those things. But you can repent. You can turn from those wicked ways. You can realize that you've been led astray by somebody who started watching basketball less than 10 years ago. And you can recognize that your life doesn't have to be the quagmire of bullshit that they want it to be. You can watch the second youngest team in NBA history and look at the positives and realize that we're watching something special without really asserting that you think that they should do it your way, right? Let's just enjoy what we're watching. It's special. So take a moment, get on your knees, and pray to Sam Presti that he forgives you for your sins, and they will be forgiven. And go and sin no more.
Yeah, and you can talk like that, but I look at the Oklahoma City Thunder as being the porn of basketball right now. Like, it makes me so hard watching that team, bro. Like, I get excited, man, and I've never been so more excited watching a bunch of dudes run around in shorts as I do and get excited about this team, because I mean, when Shea gets all sweaty, there's a little piece of me that gets like a little bit like, whoa, you know, like, look at those muscles. So I'm excited. I'm just not going to go and commit myself to Sam Presti at this moment, but I will definitely be watching some porn later today. And that's the Oklahoma City Thunder for me.
Amen. Whatever you have to do.
I have to put it in the background, you know, while I'm watching that porn, put it in the background.
I'm just here's my thing, right? I'm a firm believer in Oprah, and everybody has their own way to find the Oklahoma City Thunder as their favorite team. So whether that be porn or religion, it doesn't matter. You come to the Oklahoma City Thunder and they will come on you.
Yeah, man. I mean, just, you know, we talked about it, sex, drugs, and aphrodisiacs the other day. And I got to say this, man, is that, like, there's certain things that you can do, right, to add to your sex life. And with sex, drugs, and aphrodisiacs, it will teach you all the stuff that you need to know, right? But if you're looking at a team and you're looking at an organization as that sex, you're looking at, you know, the players as the drugs, you know, and you're looking at, you know,
we're the aphrodisiac, baby.
We're the aphrodisiacs, guys. I mean, like, what else do you guys need? This is a sex, drug, and aphrodisiacs all in one system right here. And I get stoked because, like, we get to be stupid and fucking ridiculous on here. And I like it because, like, this is who I've always been. I told my dad when he was in town over Thanksgiving, I said, Dad, I was like, you know, when I was growing up, you're always like, discretion, freaking discretion. I wish you would learn discretion. Like, and I told my dad, I was like, I wish I got a nickel for every time that you said that because I would have so much money, right? Like so much money in my bank. And he was like, oh yeah. I was like, but for me now, that's all I do. It's like, there's so much lack of discretion. There's so much, like, I just say so much ridiculous things on here. And it's because it's who I am. It's not like I'm sitting here and like, oh, I gotta say something funny. No, it just pops in my head and I say something stupid. You know, like, that's the way it is. That's the way my brain works. So I do apologize sometimes that it gets a little bit weird and
don't apologize.
Talk about unavailable men and
we need it.
And boy toys and fuck toys and shit like that. So
listen, man, like the best things I listen to is when somebody takes like something that's completely unrelated to the subject matter and they like apply it and like, so what that your mind is twisted and that's, you have to take us on a twisted trail to figure out what you're talking about. I like it, man. I think people like it too. I can't explain why else we would suddenly have like so many subscribers on YouTube. By the way, we broke 100. We broke 100 subscribers in YouTube before we got to 100 days on YouTube, which is like more than we could ever ask for. We've crossed, check this out, bro. We've crossed over 1,000 hours of content that people have consumed in 100 days. I don't really know exactly what else to say, dude.
45 or something like that. Not even that many episodes. Like,
yeah.
Like I look at what, you know, we've been able to accomplish on across the different platforms and that's the podcasting and listening, you know, the podcast. And, you know, we have so many different subscribers all over, you know, like today I took time and I went over to the podcast section that we have and I popped on there and it's like, it's so crazy, you know, like, so many downloads from Australia, so many downloads from New Zealand, so many downloads from Croatia, so many downloads from everywhere in the world. And it's like, holy shit. Like, at what point did it turn out, you know, turn into this like this? Like, I get excited because it's not necessarily about us anymore. It's not just you and I getting on here and, you know, 20 people are going to listen to it and download it. It's hundreds every single time. And, you know, yeah, it's hundreds now, but we know it's going to turn into thousands because, you know, we're crack, you know, and when I say we're crack, it's not because it's, you know, I'm full of myself. It's because I listen to the other podcasts and the other YouTube channels out there that are Oklahoma City Thunder that are surrounded talking about them. And I don't listen to our podcast because, you know, I get to hear it when we do it. So, but I listen to these other podcasts and I recognize, like, you know, there's a different way of talking about the team. There's a different way of talking about what we're doing. And I'm excited because, you know, the listening base that we have now is out there telling people, is out there spreading the word. And, you know, they're subscribing, they're liking, they're commenting. Anytime that you guys comment on YouTube, we try to comment back. We try to talk to you and intermingle. We want you guys to know that we appreciate you guys. And, what I mean, it could be anything. Like, we're talking to our buddy Chris, is one of our favorite YouTube listeners, and he was talking about George Irving and some of the other guys, and I'm talking about Poku, and I couldn't help but go back and watch some stuff that I found about George Mikan in the 50s and 60s, and then I went and, you know, saw some George Gervin, you know, like. And I get excited because I see, you know, Poku's finger roll and I'm like, George Gervin's finger roll, right? Like, look at it. It's so, you know, so similar. And here I am telling these guys on the YouTube channel about it because I get excited and they're sitting there, you know, talking to us and you know, commenting about what we say. And we had a listener the other day that started off by laughing at us.
Yeah, that was fun.
And then agreeing with some of the ways that we broke down. And by the end, he subscribed. And it was the whole play-by-play breakdown of it. It meant a lot. Like, at first it was like, this dude's laughing at us. Okay, well, that's not the first time. And then it was like, oh, well, he actually thinks we're all right. And then he's like, you guys want me, I subscribed. Like, that was one of the most baller things that I've seen. And, you know, we're not out of here asking people to subscribe because we want you guys to listen to us whenever you guys want. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, like, once you guys understand where we're coming from, it's, you know, you guys are going to come back because the other podcasts out there aren't able to deliver what we're able to deliver. And that's a simple breakdown of games, simple breakdown of players, and a lot of love of fucking passion with that.
Absolutely, man. And we try to have the most fun. Because if we're not laughing, then it's not working, man. We're missing the point. Like, it doesn't mean we've always laughed. Sometimes we take ourselves too seriously, but we try not to do that too often. Before we get out of here, I want to ask everybody to do me a favor really quick. I'm going to go fishing. This is my new center pin fishing reel. I'm new to center pin fishing. I'm going to go fishing tomorrow. So if you guys watch this, just, you know, wish me luck, because new type of fishing is always a challenge. I could really use a nice big brown trout from the Delaware. That would really teach me that I knew what I was doing. So anyway, I know I'm asking for a lot, but just, wish me luck. That's all. Hey, Harper. All right, man. What's up, dog?
Yeah.
What's up, Harper?
You gonna say hi?
Hi, Harper. Harper is Dave's dog, and Harper is dope. There you go.
She's
a lap dog, girl. Dude.
Yeah, she
if anybody
she's a lap dog.
Is listening and they can't watch Harper snuggling into Dave, then you're missing out. Jump on YouTube. Jump on the video podcast. Don't miss out on this cuddly dog.
Yeah, she's a good girl. She was an abused dog. We adopted her, and it took her about 3 weeks to get around to liking me. And then one day I gave her a big old hug, and that was it. So she's been a big daddy's girl ever since. For all those who have dogs, you understand what I'm saying.
All right, dude, she gave you a little kiss. That was adorable. All right, man, we're out of here. Thanks for joining us. We will see you after the next game. Thunder up, everybody.